Alrighty, guys, welcome back to the JLR Equestrian Podcast. I have a super exciting guest with me today. His name is Tony Sandoval. And so without further ado, here we are. Welcome.
What's going on, Jordan? Thanks for having me on.
Oh, yes. He's here down in Ocala, Florida for a little bit. And so I was like, what better time to have him on the podcast and have some questions with him. So as we get started, we're going to have Tony tell us a little bit about himself and what exactly his title is.
Yeah, no, I get that a lot. So first off, I am professionally trained as a strength and conditioning coach. So I worked in the college realm for 15 plus years. So I worked in Division I colleges, and I work with over 32 Olympic sports, which don't include football. Football, it's its own deal, right? Okay. So that football in the college world is where you get paid.
Okay.
Olympic sports keep you where you're very comfortable in your job, so you don't get fired as easy, because Olympic sports, there's not a lot of pressure to win per se.
Yeah.
But in football, if they pay you more, then you better win. And yeah. I did not get it, catch enough touchdowns. So I unfortunately got fired from my last job because we just didn't win.
Okay.
So I started from there. I started doing some training off on my own in gyms and what have you. But we can go over that later on. So now that I work with equestrians, my title has changed, because before I just went through my traditional title, which was strength and conditioning coach.
Okay.
I have my certifications in that. That's what I got my graduate degree. It's my master's degree says exercise science with with an emphasis on strength and conditioning. But since working with riders, I have navigated myself through tons of like injuries where I've had to take courses that are almost PT-esque. I've had to learn a lot of different skills so that I could better help riders. So now what I try to call myself, where people can understand, is more of a sports performance coach. Because I do more than strengthen. I do more than conditioning.
Yeah.
I try to increase your or improve your performance. And I think that title encompasses a lot more of what I do.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, that's a good title for yourself. You do it all. Yeah. You're real good at it. So you went to school. Where did you go to school at?
So I went to school in Northern California, which it was Sac State. There's where I got my master's. And that's actually, being from Northern California or going there, was how I first had like a good, strong relationship with Allie Knowles.
Oh.
Because Allie, it was from that Northern California area. So when I met her and I asked her where she was from, she said, you wouldn't know, just Northern California. I said, I live there. And she said, the small city called Auburn. And I went, oh, my God, I know Auburn. I used to date a girl from Auburn. Oh, so I was there all the time. So she's like, did we just become best friends? And I was like, yeah.
It's a small world.
It's a small world. And I was like, she couldn't believe that I knew where Auburn was, because it is. It's like Sacramento is a big deal. But then if you go a little north and you see this beautiful, like, it doesn't belong in California type of deal. And that's Auburn.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So did you finish school in California and then come to Kentucky?
No, I finished school there. And then I stayed in, while I was going and getting my graduate degree, I did an internship or a working student in your all's terms in back home. And I worked for UCLA. I worked for UCLA football, and I did a couple of their Olympic sports, like men's water polo, men's volleyball, women's softball, and football. So I did that for a couple of years. They gave me a little job. So it was my first kind of little job where I learned a lot of the ins and outs. Kind of like, again, like when you're a working student, you get to clean a lot. You get to learn what it takes to run a facility. Well, I was cleaning toilets for my boss, and he wanted to make sure that when he got there, he had sleep apnea.
Oh.
So I needed to be there at 4:30 in the morning and made sure his toilet was clean, not by the custodians, but by me.
Oh, man.
And he tested me a lot. And at the end, when there was a little position available, I mean, I was the first one to get it. And I mean, I did things that I was like, I shouldn't do this, and I can either rebel or I can accept it and prove to him. So I took my situation and I made it like, this is what needs to happen. And when you're in situations like that, you can either whine and complain or you can be the best toilet cleaner you can ever be and leave it spotless. Because that's when I learned, like in that job, I learned how to really pay attention to details and love what I do. Now, it might seem like, oh, this is BS. You really it loved sucks, it.
But
I loved the fact that he noticed it. I loved the fact that I learned how to be disciplined enough to do a great job because like when I work with people, I want them to know, like, I love being here. I want that vibe to be felt. Like I would, there's nowhere else I want to be, even though it's super hot. Than watching you ride.
Like you want someone who's going to value your time. If you're going to, if you're paying them to come and help you, you want to make sure that they're valuing it.
Right.
Yeah, and that's really important.
From that job, then I got on my full-time job. In Northern, back in Northern California. And I was the head strength and conditioning coach there at a small college called University of the Pacific. And I was in charge of 32 sports all by myself. And then I hired an assistant, which saved my life. We became like brothers because we were both.
That's like all the players of all the teams.
Over, right? I think we had over 500 athletes.
Oh my gosh. That's crazy.
And every year I got new ones because we got freshmen, right? And so I learned the grind. I learned how to be really good at organizing things, how to work with multiple sports. I learned how to watch sports and do like what we call a needs analysis. So I would go out to games. I never played women's field hockey, but I had to go and learn how to train them. So I'd go to their games. I do pretty much what I do, what I do with you all. It's those skills that help me be so successful where I'm at with riders is because I understand how to,
watch and learn and
ask questions, be like the coach's shadow, and then understand what the needs are. Ask the girls, what do you guys struggle with? What, you know, and then you get to learn the sports. And I did that for, I mean, every sport. So I got, and everybody in my position that does that gets really good at understanding what the athlete needs. And then from there, I went to University of Colorado. Did football, dance, cheerleading. But guess what? I was the best strength coach for cheerleading and dance that I could be. Like I went to their practices. I was like, okay, this is what it, this is what it is to be like on the dance team. And it is hard. Like I watched their practices and their dogs were barking. And coaches yell at the girls and girls are crying. Like there's all the things, all the drama. But I learned, and especially like our cheerleading team at the time, the cheerleading coach was really like, she was really desperate to have somebody help the girls because the logo or the mascot for Colorado is Buffaloes. And the girls got so out of shape that they were getting called the Buffaloes. Like, so shaming them. So I got there and we changed the attitude. We changed the whole culture. When I left, every girl was wearing midriffs, like so confident.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it made me feel good. And when I actually did shed a tear when I left because when I told the cheerleading girls I was leaving,
they're bawling. I bet.
They couldn't control it. And I was like, oh my God.
You can't leave us. You helped us.
And so I was the, it really hit me hard. I told him I gotta leave because I can't see you all cry. And I didn't expect that. I just thought, oh, thank you. I was just expecting like happiness, but they were.
They were, but they were also sad.
Because I took the time and they took me to ESPN. I saw the whole vibe of like cheerleading and I thought like, how am I here cheering? I put myself in situations where it was awesome because I really did learn how to evaluate sport. Like that's skill that I really got good at in my eyes is like, I took the time to care. And that's like the biggest skill when you're trying to learn is you got to care about the sport that you're trying to help someone. And then I had a friend, who gave me the job at UOP. So in Stockton, he got a job as a high performance coach, which means he is in charge of all the things that influence high performance for athletes at the University of Kentucky. And he convinced me to go there, even though I was happy in Colorado, but he said, you have more time or more opportunity to advance your career here. So I went and I was part of his high performance team. So we did all things monitoring, just like you people do with horses, heart rate, recovery, load, what we call load management, everything that affects performance, we did with athletes there. And that just situation was, we were ahead of our time. A lot of the athletes didn't really like it because they felt like they were guinea pigs. You know, we were monitoring things. So much because we knew when they were up. We had bracelets that they couldn't take off because we wanted to monitor everything about them and they hated it. because we could tell when they were awake. And they hated
like,
that.
I just want my time alone.
Right.
I don't want anyone to know what's going on.
But we've got so much data that could make us better athletes. Mm-hmm. It's at UK, they didn't get and they still don't get the best football players.
Yeah.
So we had to learn how to make, and this is no disrespect, but we had to learn how to make little Civics into Ferraris.
Yeah.
Because when you play in the SEC conference, you're playing against a Georgia, Alabama, and they get the Ferrari.
Oh, yeah.
And we don't get Ferraris. Mm-hmm. We had one or two. Yeah. They have 30.
Why are they going to come to you when they can go to those big schools?
So we had to learn how to make those Civics and build them up.
Yeah.
And so it was really awesome to learn that science about it. And now that's what I bring to riders is let me throw, maybe sprinkle some, not all of it, because then I learned my lesson. It can be overwhelming. But we learn those traits to help you become a better person, healthier person, and then to become a better athlete.
Yeah. Sure, because I think your workouts like that you've done with me, they're not like overbearing or too hard, like if they're just enough where you feel like you're working the correct muscles and everything, but they're not like the next day you can't walk,
right?
But
I've done that before,
good. Yeah,
and I've broken a lot of eggs,
yeah,
doing what we call perception based workouts. So if you perceive through sweat and exhaustion that was a good quote unquote workout, that I didn't do my job. I did not do my job. My job is to educate you on what you need, what the purpose is of this session, what it's building towards, just like a lesson that you would take on your horse.
For sure.
Right? It's the same thing when you're training. If you don't know why you're doing what you're doing and what it's building to, I would say that it's not a waste of time for fitness. It's just maybe not the best approach to improve your performance.
So I think that's a great next step into our next topic. Like, what exactly would you say the difference is training to be like a fit person instead of like being someone who's trying to improve their performance on like the playing field or out in the cross country field or on your horse or whatever it may be?
So I had one of my former coaching friends, still a friend, but more, we were both in college together. And he would always say, when you come into my weight room, you train because you have a goal. When you just come in here to work out, then you're just working out with no goal. And so for me, when there's a fitness perspective, people use the term workout, and it's all wordplay, but words mean things in your brain. And if you all don't, as riders, you all don't call it working out your horse. You call it training your horse, right? This horse is in training, not this horse is in working out. Why? Because there's a level of performance that you're tying that word to, right? And then there's an expectation that there's going to be an improvement on some things. When you use workout, it's really easy to just kind of tie it to people randomly going because it's the first of the year and getting their workouts in, and then they're going to drop off. So to me, that's where I take it. I can't get out of that philosophy that I learned in college. Like, we take training to a different level. So when you're training to be fit, that is more, the goals would be to be healthy and to be stronger. Yes. And more flexible. But none of that actually means that you're going to improve your performance. I always say fitness does not equal performance. Fitness is a great starting block. But there's no way that without watching, like we did earlier, without understanding your body, understanding your pains, understanding your horse, understanding your tack, that you can actually transfer. And we call that transfer of training from what you're doing in the gym to your saddle. And that's the big difference. Because I work with a lot of people that work out, quote, air quotes again. But then they ask me, what's wrong? Why can't I do X, Y, and Z when I'm riding? They're fit.
What it's are not, you doing?
It's not transferring. What is the link? And that's where I feel I have a lot to offer people as far as improving their performance. Taking what they've been doing and going, yes, you've built that. Now let's build on top of it.
I would have to agree with that. And so, like, why do you think strength is so important for riders in the saddle and, like, in the barn and everything? Like, you're in the barn, you might be riding like 10 horses a day, you feel strong, but like, what is like doing the exercises out of the tack? Why is that so important?
So first off, I think that in the area outside of the gym where people really work out or train to be stronger, mm-hmm. like power lifters yeah. and anything that the sport, they call it the iron sports, which is bodybuilding, Olympic mm-hmm. weightlifting, and powerlifting. Those are the sports that you mm-hmm. people compete in. They value strength and they have a definition for strength that for their sport. Now, when we take strength and we apply it to different sports like mm-hmm. football, basketball, yeah. women's lacrosse, riding, mm-hmm. yeah. you have to look at strength from different angles. Mm-hmm. Now, for equestrians, I knew this from day one once I started watching Ali ride. And by the way, my first show ever was Landville.
The big one.
I yeah. thought that everybody did those jumps.
You start with the
like I didn't know. I was like, this is a look at these jumps. These are cool. This is look yeah. at me. Oh my God, this is what Ali competes in. And then when I went to my first real show, I was like, this isn't what I just saw. But what I figured out was this type of athlete mm-hmm. needed a couple different types of strength.
Yeah.
The first level of strength mm-hmm. was we want to call acquisition or muscle recruitment. You need to be more skilled at mm-hmm. doing a movement. So for instance, if you're doing, let's say, a bodyweight squat mm-hmm. and people is like, oh, I get stronger with bodyweight squats. You got stronger because maybe at first you used, we're going to call this an arbitrary number here, mm-hmm. 10 muscle fibers mm-hmm. to make your body do the squat. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard.
Yeah.
But as you keep doing body squats, you now use 20, 30, oh, okay. 100. Yeah. So now you use 100 mm-hmm. muscle fibers to the squat, and now you feel this strength.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily strength. You just got more skilled
yeah.
at doing the job, mm-hmm. which was the squat, because the yeah. brain is like, wait, are we going to keep doing this? Yeah. We might as well call more people to this party because yeah. I need to make this easier.
Yeah.
The brain's only job is mm-hmm. to keep you alive. And then there's other yeah. secondary and third yeah. level things, but the body's mm-hmm. main job is to keep you alive. Mm-hmm. So if this is what it takes, it's yeah. going to put more resources to it.
Yeah.
That's phase one.
Okay.
Phase two is like, okay, now we have 100 muscle fibers. Let's make those guys stronger. Mm-hmm. Let's make them maybe thicker. So we yeah. call that hypertrophy, mm-hmm. right? Or let's make them more dense, which we mm-hmm. can call that strength and more yeah. stability. So mm-hmm. there's those levels of exercise. Now for a rider,
yeah.
you need a little bit of everything. You need to first get coordinated. So you got to get that level of strength, but then you got to put in what we call more relative strength work. Mm-hmm. And relative strength work means more for what A, your body weight is, and B, what you're going to be doing for your sport.
Yeah.
Do you need, Jordan, do I need to put you under 400 pounds and have you squat or lunge 150? You'd be like, haha, that's crazy. No. But my goal, if you were in another sport that needed it,
yeah.
is to get you to a for point sure. where you're squatting double your body weight.
Yeah.
Or whatever that number would, whatever I would say, you need this number yeah. to be lifted mm-hmm. to help you to keep you safe in your sport.
Yeah.
So when I make up these numbers or these mm-hmm. tests, it's all for me to keep riders safe.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I've said this in a lot of podcasts and articles, but when I was working with Ali and I didn't know anything about the sport, I just mm-hmm. got her strong. Mm-hmm. And I made her muscles dense. She didn't want to be 160 pounds. I had to make Allie at the weight that she was at mm-hmm. as strong and as mm-hmm. almost like putting armor on her with yeah. muscles. So mm-hmm. she looked tighter, close, fitter, different.
Yeah.
But she was way stronger.
Yeah.
So when mm-hmm. she had that rotational fall, that mm-hmm. saved her life.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's my goal. Mm-hmm. It's not just to get you stronger so that I can say, ha, Jordan, she squats way more than anybody that I ever know. My job yeah. is to make sure that you're safe.
Yeah,
and that's why you need the strength.
Yeah.
If someone were to ask me, why do you need riders to be strong? Mm-hmm. Because I need them to be safe.
Yeah,
prevent injury. And especially yeah. if you're like out there working at the barn all day, you know, mucking stalls, bailing hay, getting hay out of those trailers and you know, putting them mm-hmm. back in the barn or wherever they're stored. That takes a toll on you. Oh,
yeah.
and you got to ride 3 horses?
Yeah.
Only the strong survive. Mm-hmm. When you're stronger, you can recover from work easier. Mm-hmm. That's another thing that people yeah. don't understand. When you are strong, you can do that work day in and day
yeah.
out. Mm-hmm. As somebody that's weak is, oh, this hurts. Oh, my shoulder hurts now. My mm-hmm. back hurts now. Yeah, because you're weak.
Yeah.
Weakness mm-hmm. is not something that is going to help you in what
yeah.
you do.
Yeah.
And so I even started working with farriers.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because
that's
farriers, yeah, because they, I mean, just watching my first time watching like a set
yeah.
get put in, I was just in awe. I lost track of time and I stayed there in my client's barn for another hour just watching. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, I gotta leave. Yeah. I'm late. But I just was in awe in the amount of work that they do, yeah, how they're doing all the things to the shoe to fit, and
yeah,
doing
a lot.
So when one of the farriers locally started asking me, like, do you work with farriers? Like, mm-hmm, like almost like an occupational therapist.
Yeah.
I said, I don't, but you'll be my first one.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
So now I got a couple people that I'm giving them more health than anything. I'm not making them stronger. I'm just helping them become more robust.
Yeah, because it is such a hard occupation.
When they got 12 sets they got to do,
yeah,
trust me, mm-hmm, their life is not, mm-hmm, so cool.
That's a hard job. That is a hard job for sure. So working out or like finding ways to keep yourself fit and getting able to improve your performance can be really difficult if you don't have the correct program. Like, you might be really good for like a week or two, but then you kind of like it fizzles out and fades. So what is like your advice for someone who wants to start working on their strength and being able to be the better rider or better athlete? Like, what's your advice for them to keep with it and keep it sustainable?
So this was very difficult for me at first to give, mm-hmm, advice for, because I came in from a world
yeah,
that you didn't have an option.
Yeah.
So I never had to work on these skills. I, yeah, never had to do any research on motivation. I just, yeah, knew when I showed up at 6 a.m. Mm-hmm. that the golf team was going to be there. And,
yeah,
if they didn't, they better be praying that there's something happened to them, because, mm-hmm, I was going to come down like no,
yeah,
other on them, right?
Yeah.
So what I've been doing now is taking the approach of, okay, where is their mindset at?
Mm-hmm.
And I think what messes people up is fitness is so broad,
mm-hmm,
and it's so hard to continue long-term, because what is your motivation? Why do you want to do,
yeah,
it? For athletes,
mm-hmm,
yes, they had to be there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was mandatory, but they also wanted to get better at their sport.
Mm-hmm.
That was their internal driver,
yeah,
to be dedicated and have,
yeah,
not motivation,
mm-hmm,
but it was just habitual. They were,
mm-hmm,
disciplined to be there all the time,
yeah,
ready to go, because they wanted to improve performance.
Mm-hmm.
So it was easy for them also, because as strength coaches, we devised a plan,
mm-hmm,
that was digestible.
Okay.
What I mean by that, it was,
yeah,
we didn't overwhelm them with,
yeah,
arm day, leg day, this day,
yeah,
that day, Pilates,
like, oh
yoga.
My gosh, I can't keep up with that.
Right.
Yeah.
So when you have someone watching over your plan,
mm-hmm,
knows when your game is,
yeah,
knows when you're sleeping,
yeah,
knows how you're eating,
mm-hmm,
we can dose your
yeah,
exercise,
mm-hmm,
your training,
yeah,
so that your brain never gets overwhelmed.
Yeah.
So now what I tell people is, take things slow. Pick one thing that,
mm-hmm,
you want to work on. So for instance, if I have someone that wants to work and train with me,
mm-hmm,
their first part of my system that I've,
mm-hmm,
that I've developed,
yeah,
which I call the EquiStrength development,
mm-hmm,
system, is to first repair,
mm-hmm,
any type of muscle injuries, tightness,
yeah,
body work,
yeah,
or for a lot of people, it's just like reinvigorate,
mm-hmm,
all right?
Yeah.
Let's just get you to,
yeah,
get to the point where you like to,
mm-hmm,
do something. It,
yeah,
doesn't have to be much. So if in part one,
mm-hmm,
if you are a person that needs to just go on walks around the property and,
mm-hmm,
that's your work,
yeah,
not because you didn't get enough steps. It's not about steps.
No.
It's about learning how to get your heart rate up a little,
mm-hmm,
bit by doing something that's cyclical. Not,
yeah,
cyclical like in a bike, but we call it cyclical motion, like walking,
yeah,
running,
mm-hmm,
things that are repetitive.
Yeah.
Just so that you can start getting your,
mm-hmm,
heart rate high enough,
yeah,
without being on a horse.
Yeah.
And then something like 10 minutes, something,
mm-hmm,
super doable.
Yeah.
And there's where you start having small exercises that don't take a long time.
Yeah.
And then building from there.
For sure. Okay, that's really great advice.
Yeah.
Yeah, because definitely, like, if you're overwhelmed, like, the leg day, chest day, or whatever, that's, like, overwhelming. You're like, oh, my gosh, I have to go to the gym this many days a,
mm-hmm,
week. Or, like, maybe you're going to start out, like, two or three times a week and be like, okay, I'm going to do these exercises and then, like, slowly build up my strength and not overwhelm yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
The questions that you should always ask is why?
Yeah.
Or actually one question, why? Why do I have to go 3 times a week?
Yeah.
If you don't know that answer,
mm-hmm,
your brain is going to be, it's going to be more likely to find ways why you don't.
Yeah.
Why you,
mm-hmm,
shouldn't, why you should stay in bed.
Yeah.
But if you know the why,
yeah,
why do I go do Pilates 3 times a week?
Yeah.
Why do I go do yoga? I'm just,
yeah,
stating things that people always do when I talk to them.
Yeah.
Why do I go running 5 miles a day? Mm-hmm. If you understand that and you can back it up, like, well, because yoga makes me feel this, that makes it easier.
Yeah.
But if you're just going and randomly doing all the things, I go to Cycle Bar, I go to Orange Theory, go to all these things,
yeah,
and you can't answer why.
Yeah.
And it's not like, well, I know I got to be fit, but why that?
Why?
Yeah. Why that many times? Why, what makes you think that going through those group classes all the time,
yeah,
is going to have any mm-hmm type of impact? If you can answer it, then that's where the people that are sustaining it,
yeah,
they can answer it. If
yeah
the people that are very spotty, they can't answer it.
Yeah.
Because if they could, they wouldn't be so spotty with it.
Yeah.
So pick mm-hmm things that are not as intense.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned, just because I did spend a little time in that public sector where people
yeah
would come to my classes
yeah
when I did group training.
Mm-hmm.
If it was overwhelming for someone, it was so hard for them to be consistent because they just thought, this sucks. I
yeah
suck.
Yeah.
I just better start somewhere else, or better yet,
or
forget
I'll
it
just take a day off. And
right.
It just keeps it.
It just
yeah
has to be manageable for you, because
yeah
even if it's one class a week,
yeah,
a couple walks, start there.
Yeah.
It's still better than zero.
Yeah.
And then you can build up to another class that you
mm-hmm
enjoy and you feel is
yeah
giving you the benefit.
For sure.
And then you, who knows what else you can get into,
yeah,
but it's always keep it manageable in your head,
yeah,
not to what TikTok, Instagram, or Facebook is telling
yeah
you. Because
yeah
even though the top writer is doing these classes,
mm-hmm,
are you that person?
No.
If
yeah
you are not, then I
mm-hmm
wouldn't take advice from that person as far
yeah
as what you should be doing.
Yeah.
You should be maybe just looking into what works best
mm-hmm
for you.
For sure. Like, I know, like, after a long day at work, sometimes it's hard to be like, oh, I need to go do these exercises because I know I need to, like, finding the motivation after those long days and finding the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard.
I think we
sure
talked about it.
Yeah.
And I gave you a little scolding about it. If when I know people that have talked about it and just, like, playfully saying, you know, we go out, we may have a couple drinks,
yeah,
but somehow we manage to go to the barn the
mm-hmm
next day and feed and water the horses, because
mm-hmm
no matter what, you will always find time,
yeah,
even if it means maybe not sleeping as much as you should, but you are not going to let go of that priority.
Yeah.
That's the key word, priority. If
yeah
you prioritize giving yourself a higher ceiling,
mm-hmm,
you will find 10 minutes
yeah
to do one or two exercises
yeah
that you know are going to help you become
yeah
a better rider.
For
if
sure
you don't know, you're not gonna really put in that much energy
yeah
because you actually don't know.
Yeah.
But if you do know,
mm-hmm,
there's nothing that you can't
yeah
that you won't do. Even if
sure
again, I'm gonna sleep a little later, I'm so tired, maybe I'll go to sleep, I'll wake up a little early,
yeah,
and I'll spend 10 minutes doing
yeah
this because it's gonna help me.
Mm-hmm.
You'll do it.
Yeah.
You'll absolutely do it. It's just when you don't know what if it's good
you
for
don't
you.
Know. Yeah.
That's when it's a problem.
Yeah. For sure. For sure. So today, Tony came over and he kind of did our assessment because I've only ever met him over video. I actually met him because I won a giveaway through Ride IQ. Shout out to them.
Hey,
and so I got
Ride IQ.
Yeah. So I got some free training sessions. That's how we got hooked up. But so we finally got to have the in-person training session. So do you kind of want to talk about what you do in those in-person training mm-hmm sessions and how it works out and everything?
So what we did today was more or less how I work with people when I'm trying to really get a feel for what they actually
mm-hmm
need. So I'm also going to give a shout out to Andy Thomas, who is a physio in England. And he used to do work for the States. That's how I met him. I met him at that Land Rover, right? And he was talking to me a lot about the sport when I still
mm-hmm
didn't really know a lot.
Yeah.
And he offered a course and he called me and he said, I'm offering this course. And I took it and I learned a lot about how a physio
mm-hmm
looks at the sport.
Okay.
Not from what a strength and conditioning
mm-hmm
coach,
yeah,
but from a physio. And
mm-hmm
what I did is I took that course and I started building upon what I feel
yeah
I needed to create performance,
mm-hmm,
not so much from what. And I'm sure he would have more or less some things to
mm-hmm
say about it. But in my eyes, when I observe, it was more to keep people like safe,
mm-hmm,
injury free.
Yeah.
And I'm taking it to like, I need to assess everything. So
yeah,
like I did with you,
mm-hmm,
I take people and I watch them ride.
Yeah.
I show them biomechanically what
yeah
what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
But mostly it's, what kind of, and I use this analogy, what type of cake are you trying to bake? Do you have all the ingredients? Yeah. If you don't, I can help you get the ingredients. Yeah. I don't show you or convince you that you need another type of cake.
No.
All I do is help you understand why you can't do what you can't, what you're doing when you're writing.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the first phase, is just assess, video analyze, see where your shortcomings are for the most part, where your areas of development. That's probably a better word.
Yeah. Like the video where we're walking in the straight line.
Yes.
You can see like how you have like the little points on my body in the video, and you can kind of see where my hips are coming off and like changing directions, not how they're supposed to. And I'm like, yes, I feel that. I feel that.
And see, if you went to a group class, would that get better?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But if
likely, probably not, because
who
they
knows
don't know what you're doing.
A lot of stuff happens in those group classes. Yeah. And they call it group because it's a way, I mean, I did it.
Yeah.
It's a way to get a lot of people in one hour and create a lot more profit.
Yeah.
And train people and try to get them all to do the same training within different levels of exercises.
Yeah.
But everybody's getting what they need.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all on one little idea that we're all getting this workout done. What goal it is, maybe it is fat loss. Maybe it is strength training. But it's definitely not performance.
Yeah, it's not performance.
So for me, once I get that, once I get people done with that, then it's on to the assessment, the physical assessment.
Yeah.
I tested your hips.
Yeah.
I tested your mobility, your stability, and we found the area where we were like, here it is, Jordan.
Yeah,
this is where we need
to
do that, that type of assessment, and then an intervention.
Mm-hmm.
So that's phase three. What type of intervention are we going to need?
Mm-hmm.
For you, I need to do a lot of body work and release. So we call that tissue work, where I release some muscles that were really locking down your hip, which you had already had experience with your chiropractor.
Yeah.
So I was just trying to do a little bit extra more like the muscle work than the actual alignment work,
because
that's not what I do.
Yeah.
That once we did that, then we went back and for phase four was, okay, post-intervention ride, where you started walking and your belt was like moving forward.
It was like a miracle.
And I could see even when you were walking, you weren't locked up.
Yeah, and then I could like stand up tall when I was walking. I was like, oh my gosh, it's different.
So even I could have worked on your shoulders. I could have worked on the symptoms. Like I told you, like, why are you slouching? Why are your shoulders like this?
Yeah.
Instead, I chose to really attack the root cause, which was your hips being locked up, which influenced upstream to your shoulders. But once we got those hips dialed in, then your shoulders started relaxing.
Yeah.
Then your hands got softer.
Yeah.
And a term that I always laugh when I hear, your elbows got softer. Like, your elbows don't get soft. The analogies that trainers use crack me up. I know, hey, I'm not making fun of any trainers, but I mean, people I gotta understand, like a lot of the things that I see and listen to from your all's culture that I have now been like indoctrinated into, when I hear a soft elbow, I am dying, because that is not an analogy that in my coaching classes that I've ever heard of, that analogy of that, because unless you're writing, you wouldn't understand.
Yeah,
it,
like
right?
If you're writing, you're like,
you
okay, I understand.
But for me, like,
if you're
elbow,
like at any other like top, no.
Like, I'm like, no, my elbow, I used to be hard actually, you know, I don't want, if I fall, that thing needs to be there. But anyways, so all those things started happening once we released one side of your hip. So we really got down to the root cause. So once I know that I can make that adjustment, now your training program gets very specific.
Yeah.
And we need to start working on terms like transverse movement patterns, learning how to do contralateral strengthening. And you're like, what?
Oh,
that
big
sounds
words.
Hard.
Big words.
But it basically means now I'm a sniper with your training program instead of throwing a grenade and hope that it works.
Yeah.
And a lot of the people that my colleagues would call fitness training a grenade and hoping that things work in a group training center. But for performance, it's so different because you need to be a sniper.
Yeah, you have to make sure you're doing the right things at the right time. And making sure it's like getting the muscles that you need to
Exactly. Just think about it. If you have a cup and the cup can only handle so much stress throughout the day. Now, 90% of that cup is filled with horse stress.
Yeah.
Meaning you're riding, you're doing all the chores. You have 10%.
Yeah.
if I want to make sure that that 10% is going to optimize your performance. Yeah. So it has to be snipered. It has to be so legit. Now, if you go to a fitness program, it's not like it's not legit.
Yeah.
It's just that it's so broad that you're not going to be able to recover from it and still become a good rider, because usually those fitness classes, they're perception based.
Yeah.
I have to make you sweat to make you think that you did a good job. Because if I did it the way they do it in college, where it's very, very organized, you may or may not get a sweat, because the goal for that day might be different.
Yeah.
It might be neurological. You don't sweat a lot when you're trying to do a lot of muscle thinking.
Yeah.
If it's like endurance, you're going to sweat your butt off.
Yeah.
But maybe that might not be the goal for the day.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, but when your people are paying you to sweat, you got to give them the sweat.
Yeah.
And that might mean 40% of stress. Wait, you only had 10% in your cup left. Mm-hmm. Where does that other 30 go? It overspills. And now it makes it harder for you to recover. And your brain neurologically will take the hit. So that means now you become neuro. And I know that's another word that you all use. Now you become neuro in the sense that you're not as reactive. You're not as explosive. Yeah. You can't anticipate as fast. And you're wondering why. Oh, maybe it's because I'm not sleeping enough.
Yeah.
It's because you're trying too hard with your fitness programs. That's the issue. I have no problem with fitness programs for people that just want to be fit.
Yeah.
It's riders that don't understand the difference, where I feel like you could do so much better.
Yeah. And you're really good at like watching and analyzing the riders and really pulling apart the pieces that are missing. Like, oh, like your hips are going this way, and like, I'm going to pinpoint this spot to work on you, and let's try these exercises. Like, is that in your schooling where you learned how to do that really? Or like just hands-on experience really?
It's a lot of time investment, to be honest. I've been to more shows than I know, like how, I mean, I've been all over trying to watch, because I feel like I had to pay my dues to you all so that you all can understand, like, I'm serious about this.
Yeah.
You're not just going to see me behind a computer pumping out 8-week programs for better riding. No, my boots were on the ground. Why? Because I have to make up for not having a horse of my own.
Yeah.
Instead, I pet everybody's horses. You know what I'm saying? Like, I will do the nostril rubs all day to people's horses. But that was my way. Like, again, I was cleaning toilets.
Yeah.
To get into the strength and conditioning, for me, it's going to all the shows, investing time and money to travel. That's why I'm here in Ocala. I want to go to the shows. That's why I go to different farms and talk to different professionals, because there's where I learn. My assessments are incomplete. They were pretty good when I first started, but they've evolved. Now I start talking to saddle fitters.
Yeah.
What is the importance with your tack?
Yeah.
That's a variable that I didn't think about.
Yeah.
And when I looked at yours and I started making some assumptions, that when I saw you, I was like, dude, that was spot on for what we found out when we were rubbing on the panels together.
Yeah.
And then looking at what we did in college. So when you come in, we assess your height, your torso, so your upper body dimensions or length, and then your femur, so your upper leg and your lower leg, and we start getting ratios between your lower leg and your upper leg. And if the ratios are a little off, that means you're going to be able to do some exercises better than others.
Okay.
So in order for us to keep you healthy when you're playing, we need to give you the best opportunities to get stronger with the best exercises that fit your skeleton.
Yeah.
Right? Just that like a saddle fitter does to you.
Yeah.
So when I start talking to saddle fitters, I start getting this whole idea of why use this is a certain size, why different trees are better for you, or whatever brand you go to. To me, it's getting more information. So now when I assess someone, it's from top to bottom. And I even mentioned to you, like when I start like peeking my head into the body work of a horse, now we're going to be talking, because now it's like, I know how to do body work on people.
Yeah.
You get me now learning how to do that. That's my next little goal, is to now keep growing it and learning and going, why does that horse have such a very like narrow gait?
Yeah.
Why is it hard to bend from one side to the
other? Aren't they able to open up their stride or something like that?
And I know it has something to do with maybe an injury or the way they were trained, but also there's a variable called the human that's on there.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can start to optimize that relationship, boom, fire, right?
Yeah.
That's my ultimate goal, is to improve performance at a level that we do in every other sport except with you all.
Yeah,
That's why I guess
everyone just over like thinks it. They're like, oh, we don't need that. We'll just train the horse this way or train ourselves this way. It'll be fine.
I mean, I get fired up when I talk about it. And I'm sure my decibel levels are on here get a lot higher, but that's the way I coach. That's the way I am as a person. But man, I just can see it. Like I can see what I want to produce and what my assessments want to be, right? And then to be able to go, Jordan, how do you feel? How's all this going? And you're like, man, I'm killing it right now. My horses are sound. I'm ready to roll. And that excitement is what excites me, is that you all are feeling the effects of a well-planned program.
For sure.
And getting the exact same treatment
that your other
a lot of athletes in other countries get. Which kills me because I have people that work at, like in England at the English Institute of Sport, and they do this to their riders. And I'm like, dude, nobody does this in the U.S.
Over
but,
here.
Oh, they call it equestrianism over there. Yeah, and I'm like, equestrianism? We don't. They just call it equestrian. No, we have an actual legit.
Like, I feel like you're the first trainer that's like actually helping riders figure this out and
trying
to help them improve and get to their best like athletic ability, I guess.
That's it. It's just athletic ability. It just can't be your horse. And so even with the adult amateurs, well, I mean, I'm never going to go past beginner novice. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The goal is that's the journey is, don't you want
to optimize
you, whatever that optimize is, that's where the conversation is when I have with people is, what is your goal? How do you think you can be the best version of yourself? I mean, I have an 83-year-old woman and she's out there and things are hard for her. And sometimes she has some spasms, but guess what? That woman is out there on Tuesdays or Thursdays and Sundays, if it's just to clean her horse's foot. And I'm like, I try hard for her because she's out there like, she's telling people, bury me with my horse. So for her intensity and her passion makes me passionate. Awesome. And so her optimize is different than your optimize, right?
For sure.
But it's still the same. People always ask me, well, do I need to be like an upper level advanced rider to work with you? No. My 83-year-old client, she's not.
No.
But she loves it because I know and she knows that we're working towards her goal.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And everybody's goal is different.
And we're all very fortunate to have you helping us and have you in our community. It's great.
Thanks. I love being here. I love being here. And I love petting all the dogs that I meet at the barns. Oh, my God. That's like my favorite. I would like to say meeting all the people. And I think that's a close second. But my first is just meeting all the dogs.
All the dogs. All the dogs. Everyone has dogs. Oh, boy. So as we wrap this up, is there anything that you want to give advice for these riders or specifically young riders maybe that are coming up that are kind of like not sure about wanting to start working out or getting fit? What advice could you give these young riders?
I think the young riders, and I focus on them a lot because you all are the future. Sometimes if I work with someone that's a little older, set in their ways, they listen to me, but I'm trying to make an impact at the pony level, at the young rider level, at the developmental level. Yeah. That way when you all are in your mid-30s, 40s, you are well trained in all aspects of being an athlete. Yeah. So I would say for the young riders, look into programs that really understand what you're doing, not just from a, like an athletic or fitness program, but someone that is going to take the time to understand your sport, because that's an easy ticket in. Yeah. If that's a question that they can't answer because, oh, it's too busy, or I work with football, or then just think about, do they really know what you're doing? Yeah. Because they'll get you fit, but fitness does not equal performance.
Yeah.
And so that would be my best advice. Now, once you find someone, if you're just trying to get going, I would say, let's work first on doing something very simple. Mm-hmm. Like if it is walking, get your walking done. If it is yoga, just be consistent with small, like 10-minute classes. Mm-hmm. Don't overwhelm yourself to start, because when you first start, your brain is going to say, I don't want this.
Yeah.
It's just a natural thing. Yeah. Once the honeymoon stage is over and then it gets real, when you have to wake up all the time, now you're going to start dumping it. So start with a 10-minute little YouTube program that you can find. Forget yoga with some one girl that is very popular. I totally butchered that. But there's this one that everybody tells me, and I can't remember her name. Great. She has different lengths of yoga. Mm-hmm. Great. Start with the small one. Don't go an hour, because then you'll be too sore to continue.
You'll be like, oh my gosh, I can't do
this. No, start with something where you can get small wins and build off those small wins. I don't care if it's Pilates class, yoga class, little strength training classes. Start small and work your way up. Not even every week, every month, because you're not trying to train your body. That will come.
Yeah.
You're trying to train your brain to make it easier for you to make that a habit.
Yeah.
And you can become disciplined. Because discipline is what's going to take you to the spot that you need to, because this is a long process, Jordan. Yeah. You're going to be in this program for a minute. Yeah. It is a journey. And in order for you to continue that, you have to create motivation into discipline and discipline anchored in your values.
Yeah.
That's my biggest advice for the young riders.
Yeah, that's really good advice. Man, everyone's going to be learning so much from you. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast, and I hope everyone learned something, because I know I definitely did. Well, thank you.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me on.
Yes, of course. Alrighty, Tony, before you leave, can you please tell us how people can get in contact with you, either your website, your social media accounts, or whatever that may be?
Yeah, people can get a hold of me by going to my website, which is coachsandotraining.com. They can also look me up on Instagram at coachsandotraining, one word, and that's the same handle that I use for Facebook.
Awesome. Sounds great. And are you having any openings now? Like if people want to do some training sessions with you or anything like that?
I sure am. I can do online assessments via Zoom, so people can take advantage of that. And if they're listening to this podcast, if they just mention your podcast name, I'll throw in a couple little extras, incentives, as a thank you for listening to our conversation.
Awesome. Well, thank you.